It's good to be back with you after having been away for a couple of weeks in gospel meetings, first of all down in Athens, Alabama, and then last week up in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Both good meetings, very different from one another. No two congregations are the same, and no two meetings, even in the same place, are ever the same. But these meetings were good, each in their own way, and glad to be able to do that work. But good to be back with you this morning. And I want us, as you can see on the visual, to talk about our need to be decisive in the Lord's work. In the 12th chapter of Matthew, in verse 30, Jesus made a very familiar statement when he said, "He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad." We have a number of different expressions in our English language that describe indecisiveness. We talk about somebody being wishy-washy or somebody beating around the bush or trying to straddle the fence. All of those expressions describe the problem, really, of the person that Jesus described in the 13th chapter of Matthew in the story of the sower. Who sowed seed on different kinds of ground. And then interpreting that parable, Jesus said that the seed that fell on the stony ground, where it didn't have much soil, he said that's like people who have no root in themselves. And they obey the gospel, seeming to be very enthusiastic about it, but after a while they quit and they fall away. And that inability of a person to make a decision and then make that decision stick, to be decisive about one's commitment to the Lord is a very serious problem. And if indecisiveness is a problem in the world in general, and it is, it's certainly a problem in regard to spiritual lives. If we're not able to keep the commitments that we make, Then we certainly are not going to be able to make it all the way to heaven, are we? So I want to think with you for a few minutes now about the importance of using the freedom of the will that God has given us to make choices and to make those choices a little bit more firmly than we sometimes do, even after we've made the decision to be a Christian, to become a Christian. We sometimes don't live our lives with enough decisiveness. The Lord asks us to use this wonderful choosing ability that He's given us. We call it the freedom of our will, the freedom of our minds. It's an ability that He's given us to make choices. And it's a unique endowment that He has given to us. The pity is we don't use it as we ought to many times. But God challenges us throughout the Scriptures to decide whether we're going to be with Him or against Him. So make a firm choice, either for or against Him. You can think of several familiar passages, I'm sure, that make that point. One of them is in Joshua 24, when toward the end of his life, Joshua was urging the people to remain faithful after he was dead and gone. In Joshua 24, verse 15, Joshua said, "If it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, then choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which were your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites, or in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That's one of many passages that challenge us to think about the decision we have to make in regard to the Lord. And then once having made that decision, to honor the commitment that's involved in it. Another passage that always comes to my mind is in 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21, when Elijah was having his contest with the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. And before they had the test to see which God would bring fire down from heaven to devour the sacrifices, Elijah issued a little challenge to the people who were going to be observing this contest. And in 1 Kings chapter 18 and verse 21, it says, "Elijah came to all the people and said, How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, then follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the last part of the verse says, the people answered him not a word. They apparently thinking very seriously about what he had said, and at that point weren't sure whether the Lord was the true God or Baal, whom they had been worshiping. But he issued a very serious challenge to them to get off of the fence and once and for all to make up their minds who was going to be God and then to follow him. What's needed, of course, is more than just a one-time decision about God. I sometimes wish that it were that way. You could just think about it very carefully and then make your decision about God, and that would just lock in your behavior for the rest of your life. But it doesn't go that way, does it? Faithfulness to God requires constant determination and decisiveness and resoluteness. We have to continue to make the decision. Maybe we'd say we have to continue to make good the decision that we made to follow the Lord. Somebody wrote me a few weeks ago about the matter of forgiveness, and they said, Brother Henry, when you forgive somebody and then maybe later you start having feelings like you didn't forgive them, does that mean that you didn't really forgive them? And I wrote back to say, no. Forgiveness is like most things. It's not a one-time decision that you make, and you never have to think about that ever again. You make the decision, but then every time that issue comes back up, you have to make that decision again and keep making it and keep making it and keep making it. And that's the way it is with our decision to follow the Lord. The problem that many of us have is that we never have really, even initially, fully made up our minds about God. The Bible uses the word convert or conversion to talk about turning from whatever it was we were following before we followed the Lord to turn around and be converted and go in the Lord's direction. But I'm afraid sometimes people don't really make much of a decisive turn. They turn partially to the Lord. Maybe a part of their mind is going in His direction, but they've not decisively cut loose from the past. They haven't burned their bridges behind them. Maybe they're wanting to try to keep their options open in case it doesn't work out. But in either way, a lot of people just have really never fully made up their minds about God. You've probably heard this quotation, and I don't know who originally said this. But on the plains of hesitation lie the blackened bones of countless millions who at the dawn of victory sat down to rest and resting died. Well, that's it, isn't it? On the plains of hesitation, many people lose their eternal salvation just because they're not willing, for whatever reason, to make the tough decision, and sometimes it can be a very tough decision, that if the evidence is sufficient that God is God and that the gospel is His word, that the gospel is true, then it's worth making, however tough a decision it may be, to take a stand for that one way or the other. So that requires that we use this freedom of the will that God has given to us. I'm afraid, like many of the good gifts that the Lord has given to us, we just don't use it very often. But secondly, I want you to think about the fact that if we just don't ever really decide one way or the other, that eventually ends up being the same as being against God. Most people wouldn't say that they're hostile to God, but a lot of people end up at the same place simply because they've just put off really making a decision and put off until finally, the first thing you know, their lives are gone, their whole lives have been lived, and it's been a life lived really in limbo, on the plains of hesitation, not having made up their minds, and for all practical purposes, as Jesus would look at things when he said, you're either with me or you're not, the person who really never has decided to be with the Lord ends up being on the other side, the same as if he were an enemy of God. The thing that we call our character, by that I mean the person that you really are, the person that you are on the inside, with these character traits and attributes, our characters grow as a result of the cumulative effect of a lot of little decisions that get made over a long period of time. Whoever you are this morning, for better or worse, is the result of a lot of probably billions of decisions that you've been making since you started making decisions. And most of those decisions we make very carelessly. We may make them by default, simply by not making a better decision. We just go with the flow and just do that which is easy. But that in itself is a decision. If all you decide is that you're just not going to do anything and let nature take its course, that's a decision. And so over time, it's kind of like a snowball. You know, a great big snowball is made up of billions of little tiny snowflakes that started out maybe when somebody just got a few of them together and packed them together and they started rolling that around. And as one snowflake adheres to another and another and another and another and billions of them, first thing you know, you've got a huge snowball that maybe you can't even push. But it got that way little by little by little. And your character has gotten to where it is, for better or worse, with one decision being added to another and another and another. And first thing you know, you've got a character that's either going in God's direction or going in the other direction. Very few people, very few evil people set out to be evil people. I doubt when Adolf Hitler was a little boy that he sat around thinking, you know, I want to be the person that most people think of when they think of evil in this world. That probably wasn't his goal as a little child. He got to be a very malevolent character one decision at a time, most of which decisions he probably made without thinking them through very carefully and just allowed the course of events in his life to carry him along. The course of least resistance, as somebody said, is what makes men and rivers crooked. Now, water always seeks lower ground, and it's going to take the course of least resistance. If water is flowing downhill and it meets an obstacle that would require it to do work and go uphill before it gets on the other side, water's not going to do that. Water will go around the obstruction. It was going to take whatever's the easiest path to lower ground. And that's why when you fly, you know, and you look down at a river, it looks like this. That river got crooked by just taking the course of least resistance, going around obstacles rather than dealing with them. And that's the way human characters get crooked. Just by not deciding to deal with difficult issues, but just letting life continue to flow and just do the easiest thing. First thing you know, you've got a person at the end of that person's life who has ended up really being an evil person, not because that's what they set out to do, but because by not making the tough choices in life to stand for what's right and to do what's good, you become a crooked person. You become an evil person. A lot of people are what they are just by virtue of postponement. Decisions they knew they should have made, they've been thinking about it, putting it off because it was going to require dealing with some unpleasant business. And so by procrastination and postponement, rather than living their lives purposefully, making choices about who it's best for them to be, they just end up being somebody that's far from what they know they ought to be. The road to hell really is paved with good intentions. People that were going to do better as soon as they got around to it. That they were going to make these decisions maybe when they could get them on sale, when they could get a bargain on it, maybe the terms wouldn't be quite as difficult. They were going to do it, but that time never came. And so they ended up being hostile to truth and goodness just by default. Have you ever been in one of those, maybe a book club or a CD club or something where they're going to send you something every month unless you tell them not to. You get a little card in the mail, and if you don't want this month's selection, you've got to actively write and tell them, I don't want it. But the default position is that this thing's going to come. If you don't make any decision, you're going to get it, and then you're going to have to pay for it. Well, the default position with regard to God is not a very good position. The only decision you make is just not to make a decision, to put it off. First thing you know, things happen that you wished wouldn't have happened, but they were the result of unmade decisions. In the 7th chapter of Matthew, when Jesus ended the Sermon on the Mount, That was the very point that he made in that story about the wise man and the foolish man. Wise man built his house upon the rock. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. The wise man's house stood, and the foolish man's house was smashed by the storm. Well, what's the point of the story? Why, is that just a story about building construction? No. The point is that this foolish man, just like the wise man, could look ahead and see that there probably were going to be some dangers that would have to be dealt with, and he should have taken some precautions against those dangers and built a better house, but he just didn't. Maybe it'd be too much trouble to build that stronger house. Maybe it cost too much money. Just defaulted on the decision to protect against the inevitable storms that were coming. And so Jesus said in verse 24 of Matthew 7, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I'll liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock." But verse 26, "Everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them," maybe he could see that they were true, that he ought to make a decision about it, but he just deferred that to the future, "that man is a foolish man who built his house on the sand." And so the Lord, that's the nearest thing that you see to an invitation in any of the sermons that the Lord preached. And his invitation on that day was to make up your minds whether this is true. And if it is, do something about it or take your stand against it if it's not true. But don't just do nothing as if you can deal with it later. There really is not any more insulting offense that you could give to the Lord, is there, than just to say, "Well, this is not really even important enough for me to decide about today. I believe other things need to be dealt with today. This can be put off until later." What could you do that would be any more insulting to the Lord than simply to say he's not important enough to make a decision about? Revelation chapter 3, verses 15 and 16, the letter of Christ to the church in Laodicea, that was the lukewarm church. They weren't really enemies of God, but they weren't really very much in love with him either. They were just kind of neutral. The Lord used the strongest language in all of those seven letters to describe their unwillingness to be more committed and more decisive. Maybe the strongest passage in Luke chapter 9, and the Lord said, "The person who puts his hand to the plow and then turns back is not fit for the kingdom." Now that's strong, isn't it? For the Lord to say there are some people that are not fit to be citizens in his kingdom. Who is that person? Well, Luke chapter 9 says it's the person who puts his hand to the plow, but then he's wishy-washy about it. He changes his mind later. So verse 62, "No one, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God." So there really isn't any middle ground, is there? Matthew 6 and 24, Jesus said, "No one can serve God and mammon." You'll either be on one side or another. So what the scriptures encourage us to do is what Peter said in 1 Peter 1 and verse 13 when he said, "Gird up the loins of your mind." Get a grip on your thinking is the way we would say that. Mentally prepare yourself to decide what's right and what's not, and then make the decision and make it stick. Take a stand for the truth of the gospel. Gilbert led us just before the lesson in the singing of that wonderful song, "I am resolved to follow the Savior." That's really what it takes, resolution. You remember the story that that Jesus told in the 16th chapter of Luke about the unjust steward? He was a wicked servant, but when he was fired from his job, he called in his master's creditors and forgave them debt so that they would take care of him when he lost his job. Well, that was a dishonest thing to do. And when the Lord commended that unjust steward, it wasn't because of his dishonesty. It was because in his wicked, worldly way, he at least looked forward to a problem he was going to have and made some provision to take care of the problem before it got to a crisis stage. And so the Lord commended this man because when he looked at a problem, he thought about it and he said, I have resolved what to do. What he did was wicked, but the Lord was commending his resolution. And he made the point that sometimes people are more resolute in their wicked plans than the righteous are in their righteous plans. Wicked people sometimes are more decisive about what they do. But what is it that usually makes us indecisive? And even when we've made a decision, what is it that sometimes overthrows our decisions? Well, it's our emotions, isn't it? It's our feelings. We make a decision today, but tomorrow, it may be difficult to keep that decision, and so it gets unmade when feelings and emotions get in the path. Some of you know when I'm on my regular schedule at home, I get up about 5 in the morning. And that's a very difficult thing for me to do, probably more difficult for me than most people. I'm just not a morning person. So to resolve to get up at 5 the next morning is a serious resolution on my part. It's easy the night before to say, I'm going to get up at 5 and get busy doing things that need to be done. Much more difficult when the alarm goes off at 5 in the morning, when your feelings are in favor of staying in that bed for a little while longer. Feelings overthrow that fine decision that was made the night before. And that's why I asked my brother, Phil, who lives up in Bowling Green, Kentucky, to call me at 5:30 every morning to make sure I'm up. Because if it's just me trying to keep that resolution, sometimes I'm just not able to put mind over mattress and get up. So our feelings are fine. They have a role to play in our lives. The Lord gave them to us. But there are times when our feelings just need to be put in their place, so that they don't overthrow decisions that we have made that were good decisions. Sometimes it takes hitting bottom before we finally are forced to make decisions that should have been made way earlier. In the story of the prodigal son, in Luke chapter 15, the young man left home and wasted all of his part of the inheritance. And it says when he came to himself, as he was feeding swine there, the lowliest of low jobs as far as a Jewish boy would be concerned, it says he came to himself and he resolved to get up out of that pig pen and go back home and seek his father's favor. Well, it would have been good if he had have reached that decision before it got that bad. But sometimes we don't make decisions, do we, until circumstances put a gun to our head and say, this has gone far enough. If you don't make this decision now, disaster is going to overtake you. Would that it didn't have to go that far before we simply decide what's right and firmly, resolutely make a decision to do what we should. So what decisions are you putting off? What decisions am I putting off? There's some commitments that you know you should have made long before now about studying your Bible every day. The fact that you don't do that is not an indication that you're opposed to Bible study. It's just that maybe you have not committed yourself to that in any kind of serious way, and maybe because you've just been putting that off until it might get easier to do that on a daily basis. What about prayer? Anything in your mind that you know you ought to do better about that, but you've just been putting off the decision to do it? What about teaching and helping and encouraging other people with regard to the gospel? Whether they're people who have never obeyed the gospel that you would have the opportunity to teach, or some fellow Christian who needs encouragement in their faith. Anything about that that you've been procrastinating? What about broken relationships? Rectifying wrongs that you have done, that's hard to do. And that is easily procrastinated. I'll tell you, I don't know if anything any more easy to procrastinate than an apology that needs to be made. Are we putting those things off? Are you away from the Lord? Have you become unfaithful to the Lord? And you know that long ago you should have made a decision to come back and recommit yourself to the Lord, but somehow it's just been easy to put that off until next week? And what about obeying the gospel? Have you known for a long time that that's what you ought to do, but you've deferred that decision until later? I was thinking just the other day about how long it took me to finally obey the gospel after I had been agonizing over that and knowing that that's what I should have done for a long, long time. I think it was the better part of about a year that I agonized over that and just put it off. And I was never, I don't think I've had a year that was any more miserable year of my life than that year where I was just deferring doing what I knew needed to be done. There's nothing that will sap your energy any more than an unmade decision. Just deferring something that should have been dealt with, but you put it off and you put it off. That will eventually destroy you. More than just wear you out, it will destroy you. Unmade decisions are ticking time bombs. Put off a decision, you put off, put off, put off. Eventually, it's going to explode and maybe destroy your life. Eventually, the day of judgment may come. And you have no more opportunity to make that decision. Either way, it's a ticking time bomb that you need to defuse today before you go to bed tonight. I knew a preacher years ago who had a little plaque on his desk where he saw it every day that simply said, "I must, I can, I will." That's a good motto, isn't it? This is something that right obligates me to do. I must do it. And if it's right, it will always be possible. I can do that which the Lord expects me to do. And so I will do that. That's the one part of it that the Lord can't do for us. He can't make your choices. He can't make your decisions for you. Only we can. Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 8 says that Jesus learned obedience by the things that he suffered. Jesus had to choose to obey. Let me tell you, if you think it was always easy for Jesus to choose to do what he had to do, you just had never read the Gospels. He agonized over going to the cross. He dreaded it. The text says that he was in great distress the closer the time came. And what was happening in the Garden of Gethsemane? He was deciding whether to do it or not. I think there's a certain sense in which Gethsemane was harder than Golgotha was the next day. If you ever had to make a painful decision, you know that making the decision is the hard part. Once you resolutely gird yourself and make the decision, then carrying it out is almost easier than making the decision was. Well, Jesus had to learn how to say yes to obedience. And in asking us to make our choice and follow him, Jesus is asking us only to do what he did for us. He had to choose to go to the cross, and he said in Matthew 16:24, "Take up your cross and follow me." I chose what was right, and I call upon you to choose to do what's right with me. So in the end, Jesus is going to deny those who just never seemed to think it was important enough to say yes decisively and resolutely to him. Matthew 7, starting in verse 21, he said, "There will be many people in that day who will say, 'Lord, Lord, we did these wonderful works in your name.'" Church-going folks. But they never made the decisions that they should have made. And the Lord would say, "Depart from me, I never knew you." I don't doubt on the judgment day there'll be a lot of people who, when they hear their doom pronounced as being enemies of God, will say, "What do you mean, enemies, Lord? We were on your side." And the Lord will have to say, "No, you weren't. You never really decisively turned to me. You never gave me anything but what was convenient. And I never knew you." So Hebrews 4 and verse 7 says, "Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts." Most of us have already wasted too much of our lives trying to have it all ways at once and to have our cake and eat it too. Almost every hard decision you will ever have to make is going to involve some loss. There'll be a price that'll have to be paid. And we foolishly put off making that decision because we think somehow I can find a way to get these circumstances arranged such that I can make this decision and there won't be this price involved. But that's just never true. Salvation never goes on sale. It always is costly. And you just have to total up the advantages and the disadvantages, the price and the benefit that you seek by paying that price. And once you've totaled it up and assessed the situation, then to say, I am resolved no longer to linger. Turn to the Lord and no turning back. I believe the folks who get to heaven are going to be the folks who just were so decisive about it, they would not be denied by anything the devil could throw in front of them. They were willing to make a commitment, not just a maybe this would be nice kind of a thing, but a do or die commitment to choose the Lord and to reject everything else at whatever price. So I don't know what decision you need to make today. That would depend on who you are and where you are in relationship to the Lord. But I can think of two or three decisions that I could easily make before bedtime that would make a big difference in my spiritual life. And I challenge us all to quit wasting time, delaying, stalling, and thinking that somehow this is going to get easier. Just do what's right. And do it today. The invitation song that Gilbert is going to lead us in singing is for the purpose of encouraging us, everyone, to make the choice to do what we ought to do. And if we can help you do what you need to do, then we hope you'll come to the front while we stand and sing the invitation song.
Would you be free? Evil a victory win. There's wonderful power in the blood. There is power.